Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Stu does America.
Now, you might have noticed that today's show open said we'd be doing RFK Jr.'s War on Dogs. And I do want to get to that. But let me first start with the latest fallout from Biden's pathetic debate performance from last week. And it has been a legitimately incredible week. I mean, less than 1 week ago was the debate. Think of what's happened. I mean, you had that debate. It was horrible. We did all the coverage here. We were talking about, does this guy step down? I mean, how is that even possible? What happens? We went through all the possibilities. Then it seemed like for a couple days, maybe they had sort of fought off those initial couple of cycles of resistance without necessarily getting huge people to kind of come out and make statements. They got tweets and support from people like Barack Obama, and they went down that road. And then over the weekend, it seemed like the pushback on this was really more about the reaction to the debate rather than the debate, which is really strange. Like, basically they said, yeah, the debate was bad, but then a bunch of Democratic aides came out and they were like, oh, well, you know, all these bedwetting brigade is the term they use to try to describe a bunch of liberals who were now wavering on Biden. And that just pissed off a lot of the Democrats. And again, what pisses you off and what pisses off Democratic operatives are two different things. Like, we get mad because, like, our prices go up and we abandon, Afghanistan in a horror show and our border is open. They get mad when internal aides at the White House tell them to say the wrong things because then they look stupid, right? For months and months and months and months, they were saying, actually, Joe Biden is better than ever. Feel free, go on the air, call him cogent and better than he's ever been, and you won't look like an idiot in a few weeks. Well, they did that because they just listened to whatever the White House says and have been doing that for years, and then they get burned. That's not a good thing for them, good place for them to be. So, like, this is developing so quickly, it's almost hard to keep track of it. In fact, by the time you listen to this, I don't know, maybe he's already dropped out. But let me give you at least a little bit of an update. Biden's post-debate crisis is now evolving into a genuine threat to his election bid. This story I pulled this morning from CNN, and I go through it, but honestly, it's like so outdated from just the stuff that's happened since I woke up. It's just fascinating. Biden campaign sends all staff memo seeking to calm fears about his candidacy. He talks about a couple of the polls, and I will say, we go through polls a lot on the show. The polls so far, I wouldn't call them a complete catastrophe for Biden yet. I do think that's probably coming. It's probably going to get significantly more ugly. The question is, can he hold on long enough for people to kind of start forgetting about this? They will forget about it. They will. They will. Now, if you keep refreshing their memory, maybe that sticks around, but I will tell you, eventually they will. They did say this was interesting, and this may very well be out by the time you hear this, but there is a new New York Times Siena College poll that's due out today. As of the time of this taping, it has not come out yet. The Biden campaign was actually prepping its operatives, saying that it might look like it's pretty bad. So I don't know what this poll is going to show. I don't know how they got the information and what the poll results are. It's another interesting question. But I will say the New York Times has been going all in to get Joe Biden out of this race. And I mean that sincerely. Like, we talk about, hey, we got an actual scattered shower of journalism where they actually covered something accurately. This is farther than this. They will do pretty much anything to sink this candidacy. They are sure he's going to lose, I think. And they have made the decision. We're going all in. We want this to stop. Now, that's not going on with the poll, I don't think, but I do think that this has been a fascinating back and forth over the past couple of days where story after story after story. I woke up this morning and read four or five stories on the New York Times. And you think about the way the New York Times normally covers these things. If some politician says, I don't know, Biden might be looking a little sick. I don't think he's going to make it. What do they normally do with that information? Just don't put it in a story, right? you don't know about it, right? They might hear, they probably hear those things all the time, but they just don't put them in stories. Now, every anecdote from every meeting over the past 2 years where Joe Biden has looked a little bit out of it is in story after story after story in the New York Times. And then, before taping, we get this. Biden is going to hold a crisis meeting with Democratic governors at the White House. One of the situations that we've seen so far is that he has not reached out to his big congressional allies, his gubernatorial allies, people who he needs on his side. Why? And this doesn't make any sense. You'd think any competent political organization at this point trying to protect this presidency would be on the phone with Hakeem Jeffries and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and all these big players, trying to get everybody in line, get their ducks in a row. That's how this works. And they'd have them to the White House and, like, calm their fears. And I think the actual answer to why that hasn't really occurred yet is that Joe Biden's incapable of doing it. He can't have a meeting with them because in that meeting he will likely look somewhat similar to what he looked like in the debate, and that will fuel even more of these stories. We did get this one today, and this is a pretty significant one, again, from the New York Times. Biden told ally that he is weighing whether to continue in the race. The president's conversation is the first indication that he is seriously considering whether he can recover after a devastating performance on the debate stage. You know, what we've said many, many times over is the biggest problem with Joe Biden stepping down, and I go back multiple years on this point, is that Joe Biden really wants to be president, really likes it, really thinks he's great. There's no bigger fan of Joe Biden than Joe Biden. And they don't want to give up this power. And largely what you're going to have to do to take it from him is convince him to drop it. Really, really hard to do. Probably not something he would consider. This is the first indication that maybe he would consider stepping down. The pressure is, I got to believe, it's unbearable in the White House right now. It's got to be really, really hard. And I always think to myself, why don't these guys just stick it out? I mean, you've already blown up your candidacy. Why not stick it out? Now, maybe, you know, Joe Biden's such a good man. He cares about the country, blah, 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 blah. I don't believe that for a second. I believe that as much as I believed it about Andrew Cuomo. And Cuomo's in there, and he had all these pressures about all these women coming out over and over and over and over again. And there was no indication he would actually fold to these pressures. But eventually he did. Even Andrew Cuomo, who literally cares about nothing other than himself. Like, that is just who he is. He's just that kind of guy. He even stepped down in the wake of probably less pressure than Biden is getting right now. You don't just resign the presidency on a whim. It's a big deal. But this is now an indication that he may be considering actually going forward with this. Now, if you believe the New York Times reporting, you'd probably believe that this message of an ally saying, yeah, he talked to me, he's really considering it, is something that was approved from some level of the White House, whether it was Jill or Hunter or an aide or an advisor or Joe Biden himself. Judging by the coverage we've seen from the Times, I don't know that you can get there on this because they've been so harsh on him. I don't know if you can believe it. Now, the White House has come out and said, no, that's not true. You can't believe, I mean, you really can't believe the White House on this stuff. His aides are obviously going to say whatever they have to. They denied it and said they only had 7 minutes to respond. But also, those are the people who were saying that Joe Biden was the best guy ever and was running circles around his 25-year-old aides. So there's no way to believe this. But let me give you with this one more thing before we go. And it's about the media reaction to this. And I found this to be a fascinating conversation. It's from a podcast called Somebody's Got to Win on The Ringer. It is a podcast with a couple. This is Alex Thompson and Palmieri is the female, Tara Palmieri. You've probably heard of her. She mentions a big story that she broke in this particular clip. But the point I want to make here is these are two mainstream journalists talking about the pressures and about why it's difficult, why a lot of reporters don't report negatively on Joe Biden and do report negatively on Donald Trump. Now, they're both reporters who have done some decent reporting on this stuff, so they're talking about this sort of in generalities, but this is real. What they're talking about is real. It's happening in Washington. It's happening in New York City. It's happening all over the country. Listen to the way they frame this.
Covering Biden in an adversarial or aggressive way is sort of like thankless. It's thankless in terms of the way, in the opposite ways that like the Trump thing was like, you know, really great because you're sort of toasted by covering Trump really aggressively. And then you also are getting business opportunities and speaking gigs and, you know, book deals and everything else. It's just like the harder you go, like the better it is, where I think it's, you know, in some ways, the opposite with Biden.
I 100% agree with you on that. I've been on the crosshairs.
Yeah, you have.
I mean, I broke the story about Hunter Biden and his gun. There's no holds or anything there.
This is the reporter that actually broke the story on the gun with Hunter Biden, which led to a conviction. Obviously, a massive story, but there's no awards. There's no book deals. There's no celebration. There's no wonderful gathering in your honor after that. And the opposite is true. When you break the negative things, they come after you. All this is the reason why they didn't do real coverage on Biden's age. Now, we did see it from certain circles. It wasn't like there was no reporting on his age. There was reporting on his age, but those people, like, you know, we mentioned Nate Silver the other day. Nate Silver got lit up for saying he thought he should drop out, right? Like, you get punished for saying those things, and most reporters just kind of went along with the narratives of the White House. It is a disgraceful, disgraceful period for journalism, and we've gone through many of them. But this might be the worst of all. It's one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen. Not quite as embarrassing as eating a dog on film, which is what we're going to get into next with RFK Jr. It's going to be a very dark journey. Back in a second. Your summer just got a heck more interesting and awesome thanks to Bespoke Post. Why? Well, they've got a premium lineup of Box of Awesome collections for you. And as if there wasn't enough cool gear in each box with Box of Awesome Premium, they're doubling the fresh finds. Whether you want to drink and eat, more awesome. Dress and travel, more awesome. Or explore, more awesome. Box of Awesome has got you covered. To get started, get the quiz going at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right Box of Awesome for you. It's free to join. They release new items across all sorts of different categories. So, like, I don't know, if you're into smoking cigars, they got something for you. If you're into camping, going out, they got something for you there. If you like your maybe some adult beverages, they got something in that arena. Maybe it's sports, maybe it's exercise. Whatever it is, they can hook you up with something really cool from Box of Awesome, a fantastic gift for the guy on your list that you don't know. I don't know what the heck to get that person. Get them something like a Box of Awesome. They're going to love it. You can choose from a standard or a premium box. And when you become a member, you'll have access to stellar discounts across a plethora of products. We're talking 30% off or more sometimes. Free to sign up. You can skip a month or cancel anytime. Get 15% off your first box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code STU at checkout. It's boxofawesome.com. The code is STU for 15% off your first box. Boxofawesome.com. Code is STU.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
All right, I made you a promise and I always keep my promises. So let's do RFK Jr.'s War on Dogs. Not the war on drugs, it's the war on dogs in this particular situation. This all comes from this Vanity Fair article. RFK Jr.'s family doesn't want him to run. Even they may not know his darkest secrets. Now, before we get into some of this stuff, let's give you the denial, as you might expect, that came from RFK Jr. after this was posted. He says, "Hey, Vanity Fair, you know when your veterinary experts call a goat a dog and your forensic experts say a photo taken in Patagonia was taken in Korea, that you've joined the ranks of supermarket tabloids. Keep telling America that up is down if you want. I'll keep talking about the fact that working families can't afford houses or groceries, blah, 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 politician." Okay, so a couple things on this. Number one, the expert said it was a dog, and they referred that, first of all, he had sent it and called it a dog, basically, in the text. He doesn't deny that. He also, they talked about it having a floating rib, which is specific to dogs. That's how the veterinary expert defined it. He doesn't address that. He claims that the forensic experts say the photo was taken in Patagonia when it was in Korea. That the article doesn't even say that. I don't know where he got that from. It mentions Korea somewhat near talking about the photo, but it does not say that the photo was taken there. And at no point does he deny any of the other stuff that I'm about to tell you, and a bunch of stuff that I'm not going to have time to get to today. But let me just give you this breakdown. If you didn't know the whole barbecue situation, last year, RFK Jr. texted a photograph to a friend. In the photo, RFK Jr. was posing alongside an unidentified woman with the barbecued remains of what appears to be a dog. The photo was taken in 2010, according to the digital files metadata, the same year he was diagnosed with a dead tapeworm in his brain, which might explain the other. I'm just throwing that out there. Here is the awful picture of your discretion advised, but there it is. He's, you know, faking that he's eating a dog. I don't know. I'm not a veterinarian. I don't know. Is it a dog? He's saying it's a goat. I find there to be no reason to believe RFK Jr., but of course the media sucks too, so who knows what's true. Now remember, the worm in the brain was the thing that RFK Jr. blamed on his brain fog, which we can come back to here in a second. He had a worm in his brain, he had brain fog, that's why he couldn't really make any money anymore, even though he was extremely wealthy. So, theories about Kennedy's reckless behaviors abound. Long before it was reported, members of the family knew about the brain worm, which in court testimonies, Kennedy conjectured he'd picked up from some food he ate in South Asia. Again, this all aligns with the dog story. He said the tapeworm consumed a portion of his brain and led to a protracted brain fog. But more often, his family points to the Kennedy's 14 years as a heroin user, which began when Kennedy was 15 and didn't end until he was 29. I didn't even know you could use heroin for 14 years. Like, to me, it seems like one of those things you do it a few times and there's going to be some trouble. 14 years of heroin use on top of eating canines? That is very, very difficult. And I will say, you might say war on dogs. Okay, there was, sure, maybe some dogs he ate in Korea. Also, the picture of the dog on the barbecue, that's not exactly a war on dogs. Well, we should point out that, I mean, we don't think he killed any dogs. We're not saying that. We just think that someone else killed dogs and he ate them. That's a totally different thing. And we should note that while he's not directly responsible for another dog death, he just inspired the conditions that made it occur. You have the details on that, again, from this Vanity Fair story. According to a new book called Ask Not, The Kennedys and the Women They Destroyed, which is a pretty damn good title, actually. Maureen Callahan is the author. When Richardson found evidence of one of Kennedy's affairs, she became so hysterical that she ran out of the house, got in her car, backed out of the driveway, and accidentally run over and killed Portia, the family dog. So I don't know how many dogs this guy is responsible for ending the lives of. He is, he's basically like an all-kill shelter in one presidential candidate. So congratulations to RFK Jr. By the way, did I point out, I don't think you should really consider voting for him. Not the best option. Just going to throw that out there. Even if you can't stand the other two, I would argue pick one of them or, I don't know, vote for yourself. Write yourself in before you're voting for RFK Jr. And it's not just that the dog abuse that we're talking about, or at least dog barbecue. It's also how he treats women. And, you know, there have been lots of accusations about lots of candidates in this race. Those candidates appear to be saints as opposed to RFK Jr. Let me give you some additional details that you might not know. When Kennedy was married to his second wife, Mary Richardson, he was known to text other damning images to friends as well of nude women. Those friends assumed Kennedy himself had taken the pictures, but they didn't know whether the subjects had consented to having their genitalia photographed, let alone shared with other people. When one friend lost his phone, he panicked that someone might discover the images. So he's taking pictures of women potentially without their consent and sending them to his buddies while he's married to someone else. Now, it wasn't just this incident. It was also another, Eliza Cooney. In the fall of 1998, the Kennedys hired a 23-year-old woman, Eliza Cooney, as their part-time babysitter. I got to stop here for a second. If you're freaking married to a Kennedy, you do not hire a 23-year-old babysitter. Like, that's just got to be fundamentally something you know. I'm just throwing it out there. Does not seem like the Kennedy family has not done well with young women. Unless you really like the very bottom of rivers, this is the type of thing that you avoid at all costs. Eliza Cooney, part-time babysitter. She was a recent college graduate interested in working on environmental causes and had looked after Carrie's and Max's children in Hyannisport that summer. Cooney moved into Bobby and Mary's family home in Mount Kisco, New York, taking care of the kids and assisting Bobby at his environmental law clinic at Pace University. Cooney kept incidents secret until the Me Too movement had begun in 2017 when she first told her mother, Holly, his candidacy for the president impelled her to share publicly now. Now, this Cooney allegation was that he groped her in the home. He forced her to rub lotion on him in a very creepy Epstein-y way. A lot of stuff in that realm. I don't want to get into all the details. It's a family show, after all. I mean, sure, we'll show dead dog carcasses, but we don't want to get into too many of the details. And then you have his wife, what actually happened to his wife, because he had this diary. She discovered it with all these conquests that he had, all of the cheating. She had her own depression problems. After Kennedy left her, Richardson proposed that she live in the guest house while Kennedy and the Hines family lived in the main house. Again, what weird crap goes on in the Kennedy family? He declined and then tried to avoid paying her child support using his brain fog, remember the worm excuse, as a medical excuse for alleged financial straits. Richardson, her behavior increasingly erratic, eventually lost custody of the children to Kennedy. Kennedy family, including Carrie, who had once been like a sister to Richardson, began to distance themselves from her. On May 16, 2012, Richardson's housekeeper discovered Richardson hanging from the rafters in the barn. So he was such a womanizer. He was doing this in the house with nannies and babysitters. He apparently had done it to other women that he had sent pictures around. He had a diary filled with his conquests. She discovered it and then hung herself, killed herself. Just an awful story. The Richardson family has never forgiven Kennedy, privately maintaining that his boorish and insensitive behavior was a factor in Mary's death, hiring an investigative firm to expose or explore a possible wrongful death suit against him, and encouraging Kennedy of psychological torture. The Kennedys blame Richardson's depression. Kennedy remained loyal to Bobby, who had Richardson's remains buried on a Kennedy family plot against the wishes of the Richardsons. So there you go. You got that. And this is the reason I bring this up is largely, well, first of all, I think RFK is really, really not a good guy. And I know some conservatives like a couple of his viewpoints, and I get that. He has a couple of viewpoints that are likable. That being said, that should not overwhelm what he's done with his life, how he's destroyed so many other lives, and also his policies, which we didn't even get into here, like, you know, with global warming, that are as authoritarian as anyone you've ever seen on MSNBC or worse. He is not a good candidate, would not be a good president. He's not going to win anyway, but I wanted to at least make you aware in case you were considering voting for him. And factor all this stuff into your decision. But on the same theme that we started the show, the media is powerful. And despite the fact that we now have a media that's so diverse that it feels like maybe they're not as powerful as they once were, they do have a way of communicating certain messages to people. And they are now going after Biden and saying he needs to step down. They are really threatening his livelihood and his life as a candidate. Listen to this couple of sentences at the end of this Vanity Fair article. This, to me, is like a direct threat from the Democratic Party just slipped in at the end of this article. Listen to this. The battle is not over. Another Kennedy relative told me he has warned RFK Jr. that he would become a target of the Democratic machine that would have no choice but to destroy him, you know, if he continues to run. They've already destroyed me, Kennedy replied. No, they haven't, the relative said. They haven't come close. That much is true for now. That's actually in the story. It's like a legitimate straight out threat to RFK Jr. in the middle of a Vanity Fair story. Very thinly guised as a bit of reporting about a friend who had a warning. The whole thing is crazy and nonsensical, but what do you expect in this presidential year? Seemingly anything can happen. We'll discuss that and so much more with Dan Andros. He joins us next. I was just watching the trailer for Sound of Hope, which is a new movie out. It's inspired by the powerful true story of Bishop and First Lady Donna Martin. They have a church, Bennett Chapel Church. It's in the town of Possum Trot in the woods of East Texas. The story is about 22 families from a rural black church that linked arms and courageously adopted 77 of the most difficult to place children in the foster care system. And foster care can be a disaster for a lot of kids. Adopting 77 kids is quite the undertaking. And this East Texas community proved that with determination and love, the battle for these kids can be won. And this act has ignited a big national movement for vulnerable children that still goes on today. This is how it started. And the first step to ending all of this is to raise awareness for it. So check this out. As I said, I was watching the trailer. The movie looks awesome. I mean, it looks really, really good. You've seen the Angel Studio stuff they're putting out. It's really, really high quality. This is not the days of like really bad Christian-y movies that don't actually satisfy you as a person who loves the movies. If you love cinema, if you love the movies, if you love going to see entertaining stories that are uplifting and incredible, Sound of Hope. The story of Possum Trot. It's available. These tickets are available now. Angel.com/stew. Angel.com/stew. Get your tickets now. The fight for kids begins tomorrow, July 4th, when Sound of Hope opens in theaters. Be part of this. It's a big, big deal. Angel.com/stew. Get your tickets now. Angel.com/stew.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam. Und die Black Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem. Mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
There's a furious battle going on this program for the second most guest appearances ever. On Studios America. Now, first is Glenn Beck. You may know that. You may be very disappointed in that. But second and third have been a battle between a couple of gentlemen, one, Jason Buttrell, and the other, who takes the lead for number two overall with this appearance. Let's bring in Dan Andros. He's the managing editor of CBN News and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can subscribe to now wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, congratulations. Thanks for coming back on the program.
Thank you. Back in my rightful place in the number two slot. Clearly where I deserve to be. I'm surprised Buttrell's third, to be honest with you. I mean, I think he kicks kittens in his spare time. So, I mean, he just shouldn't be that high up there. So.
Wow. I didn't realize that. That's a huge breaking news story. We'll have to get him on to talk about that soon. And then he would tie you. Let me quickly, Dan, I have not had a chance to talk to you about the debate. We all watched it on Thursday night. We just went through a bunch of the sort of aftermath a few minutes ago, going through what has happened and how it seems like the media and Democrats are aligned in getting Joe Biden out. I don't know that I ever thought I'd see the day, but what is your reaction to all this?
I mean, it's kind of interesting because we've waited for this to happen in several things, like the State of the Union address. The talk before it was, is he mentally fit? They're showing all the clips of him stumbling and looking kind of old and the age is kicking in. And then he'd kind of cobble together a decent enough performance where you'd say, okay, he doesn't look that bad. Now, we all could see the decline happening. You put him in front of a prompter, you know, I don't know, load him up with some medication, whatever they do. But this was different. I think the style and the format really worked against him in this case with the whole microphone thing, which separate conversation. I'm a big fan of the microphone cutoff thing. I love it. It's like, get your point in and then stop it. Just stop it. And Biden couldn't do it. Couldn't do it at all. And it just was really bad for him. And so this was a time where, yeah, everyone saw it. There's no denying it. Normally there's big spin from both sides saying, well, you know, it wasn't. He did great with this and that. They're even admitting that at this point. Even Nancy Pelosi going, yeah, it was terrible, but, you know, he had a long flight before that.
2 weeks before, so, he had a long,
flight. And they're giving him naps and stuff. It's just insane. But now, I guess Democrats are panicked that he might actually lose because of this. I think they thought they could kind of hide it before, but now it's just, there's no hiding this.
Yeah, strategically, they should have just said, I will not debate a convicted felon or something dumb to get themselves out of this and get them to the end. I mean, for the country, obviously that's terrible, but for just, if you're a Democrat and you want to win with Biden, what they've done here is incredible. I mean, am I delusional, Dan? I mean, they have been saying forever this guy was fine. They kept saying over and over and over again. I mean, do you see that clip of Joe Scarborough just a couple of months ago? They were all on the bandwagon for Biden.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was just a couple of weeks ago where they were all yelling about deceptively edited videos of him walking off the stage. Right. And they're like, wow, but how's Biden going to shake these deep fakes? Like, well, I don't know. Now you've got a what is the complaint now going to be? Like, oh, well, we've got deceptively edited 2 hour long debates that happened live for everyone to see. It's so deceptive. I mean, who can judge somebody on 1 2-hour debate, a 2 hour window of their time? I mean, the guy lives 24 hours a day and we're going to just take 2 hours. I mean, what is your spin at this point? You've got nothing left.
And I'm just amazed. I mean, we've been watching the media together for decades now. Have you ever seen the media turn against any Democrat like they are now with Biden? I mean, every story in the New York Times is another version of everyone around Joe Biden knew about this. It's terrible. They all want him to drop out. And here's how you can replace him. I mean, it's like they're putting together a how-to guide.
Yeah, I really think it's confirmation of what we've all known. And Stu, we've talked about this for years with Glenn on radio and everything else, of just how the media is essentially an arm of the Democratic Party. We've known this. Rush Limbaugh talked about this in the 90s to popularize it. So we've known this, and I think this is just further confirmation of that, this turning on Joe Biden, because for everything, you know, for every crazy thing Trump says at times, right? Like for every time where you think, oh, maybe he stepped over the line on that one, and he gives his critics a kind of a leg to jump in on and to criticize, Democrats and the media take it too far. I mean, they're out here saying democracy is at stake. And, oh, you know what? If he's elected, he might use the government against his political opponents. Like, really? Can you say that right now as this guy's Trump's facing all these charges all over the place, just out of nowhere? It's comical, but I think it is confirmation that these guys are just activists for the Democratic Party, and they're panicked right now because nothing triggers them more than Donald Trump.
Mm. Now, they had this thing where I think it was 86% of people who didn't want Biden to run cited his age. What was interesting about the poll, though, is just a little bit down the poll at 66%, people cited his record as president of the United States. And that part of it just being ignored. Like, it's not just that he's old. They're also saying he wasn't good at this job. Part of this, of course, is inflation. We now have the latest July 4th cookout cost. They do this every year. American Farm Bureau Federation found that a 10-person cookout that includes items like cheeseburgers, chicken breasts, pork chops, homemade potato salad, strawberries, and ice cream would run $71.22. This is a 5% increase from last year and an almost 30% increase from just 5 years ago. I mean, you look at this and you just say, well, people, it's not just picnics. People are feeling this on a day-to-day basis, and this is another massive problem for Joe Biden.
It really is, and it's incredibly ironic to me, Stu, because this is the same Joe Biden who was vice president under Barack Obama. These are the same people who, and I just Googled it right now while you were setting that up, because I had to get the exact thing. This was in 2011 while Joe Biden was vice president. The Obama White House was literally running a public campaign, what does $40 mean to you? And they had people writing in saying, I mean, all these, they have posts here. I can buy lunch from the cafeteria for almost a whole month for my twins. I can buy food or pay for gas. I can save it for my daughter's prescriptions. This is someone from Hamden, Connecticut. And they have a whole bunch of these testimonials. Are you kidding me? Where is your concern for the $40 now? I can't buy anything for $40 right now. Literally nothing. If I go to the grocery store and my wife's like, hey, can you pick up some bread, a gallon of milk, and maybe a couple of things of fruit? It's going to be $40, guaranteed or more. It's insane.
It is.
It's insane. But now we're supposed to be like, we're told now, don't believe your lying eyes. The economy's great.
It's fascinating. And this has been the problem with the media the whole time, right? Don't believe your lying eyes on how old he looks. Don't believe your lying eyes on they, you know, that student loans are not constitutional. Don't believe your lying eyes on the economy or inflation or Afghanistan or the border, any of these things. Let me switch gears a little bit, though, and go over to the NBA. There's been some a little bit of inflation I've noticed over there, too. Your guy, Jason Tatum, just got $315 million over 5 years. Like, well-deserved, probably, at this point, to be one of the highest-paid players in the NBA and NBA history, really. I'm really, though, fascinated about how the draft played out, that the rest of the league allowed LeBron James to get Bronny, his son, on his team. Like, I just can't believe there's not another rival franchise that just wanted to step up and say, screw you, I know what you guys are doing, I'm going to mess this up for you and just take him. What are your reactions to the whole Bronny thing?
Well, first of all, let me correct you. It's world champion Jason Tatum now.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure we get that out there. Yes, big Boston Celtics fan here. They're back on top where they rightfully belong. As far as the LeBron James thing, I probably have a little bit different of a take. First of all, I saw that his agent, you know, the Clutch Sports guy or whatever, apparently there was a report that he told all the other teams that Bronny, if they drafted him, won't report. He'll go to Australia and he'll go play over there. Now, is that true? I don't know, but that may have been enough to dissuade teams from taking a risk on it and then just trying to filibuster and get him so that they could hold him hostage. Because I thought the Celtics actually had one pick in the second round right before the Lakers. Yeah. And I thought it would have been hilarious if they took him and then held him hostage for the Lakers and said, like, well, give me half your team and we'll give you Bronny. But they didn't do that ultimately. And maybe that was the reason, the threat that Bronny wouldn't report. But I don't have a problem with this. I mean, a lot of people are complaining, oh, there's this nepotism at its finest. And I actually have a different take on that. We can get into it. But I don't have a problem with I guess I'm sort of pro nepotism in a way in a lot of instances, you know, we can flesh that out. But
yeah, I would love to. Yeah. Why? What do you mean pro nepotism?
Well, because I think this is one area of the American dream that I think we kind of got wrong. Like, we tell your kid, like, we kick our kids out of the house at 17 and we're like, all right, you know, I've got a nest egg here and I've got a house with a bunch of rooms and everything, but get out of here and go fend for yourself. And well, I'm not saying like you want to create a dependent, right? Like that's just sitting there on the couch and eating popcorn and doing nothing. But why don't we make it easier on our kids? It's like the hardest possible way to do things is just send them out with nothing on their own and then say, hope for the best. Like, why aren't we building generational properties, right? Like, why aren't we investing in family properties where people can actually live cheaply or freely and build up and save and actually get a head start on life on things like finances? And I don't know, maybe you can actually be around near your kids and your grandkids, and maybe that will be a nice thing to have your family connected and close together. Then when you have a business, like, you bring somebody in. Now, I'm not saying like it's a good thing necessarily if you got like some schlub or some schlep kid who's, you know, strung out on drugs all the time and you're just giving them these great positions. Like, they've got to earn it in some way. But I mean, you look at Bronny James. I mean, the kid clearly has put in work. He's a good basketball player. Like, he's not like some idiot out there who has no clue how to play basketball and then the Lakers are just taking him. Like, he's obviously a very good basketball player.
Yeah.
And so he's earned that to some extent. And so I have no problem with LeBron leveraging his position to help his family.
It's fascinating. First of all, I want to do this again, the nepotism thing, and have this conversation in full at some point. And this will get you ahead of Jason even further in the rankings. But I will say two things. One, the Bronny James, like, who else are you picking at 55? Like, you got a guy who's got this sort of pedigree as one of the sons of one of the best players of all time, even though I can't stand him.
But he's like, top 20 easily, LeBron.
Maybe, you know, we'll, of Lakers, yeah.
21, 22.
but, you know, he's obviously, there's a chance, it's a lottery ticket. Maybe he turns out to be good. Who else are you taking at that point? Why not take that risk? And by the way, I was watching the draft at that point. He was the sixth best player on the board when they took him. Really, not even much nepotism. But I'm with you on the nepotism thing. I thought I was alone on this. Like, my perspective is more like, you know, I want to be around my kids. If I can find a way to, like, be able to work with them, I don't want to spoil them and give them giveaways, but, like, I hope that they stick around and I get to, you know, see them grow up and see their grandkids. And I don't know. I'm kind of like it. And I got news for you, Dan. The reason I'm here doing a show today is to make my kids' life easier. Like, that's pretty much it. Like, I'm trying to put money away so that later on in life they have a little bit of an advantage. That's why I go to work every day at this point. So I don't know. I don't think you're crazy on that.
Well, and honestly, like, there's a whole bunch of layers to this, but just family. We're better as a culture and a society when families are together.
Yes.
Right? And we get stronger that way. And you see all these videos now of tortured millennials. They're just like, I can't afford it. Meanwhile, their parents are like living in some 5,000 square foot mansion somewhere. And you're just like, and their kids out here crying because they can't make ends meet. And it's just like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? How about we help each other out? And it just seems like there's a better way to do it to make it easier for the kids growing up. Like, it just seems unnecessarily difficult. Yeah, like, we're just throwing them in a raging rapid and saying, here. And now, look, there's something to be said for making it and doing hard work. But I think you can accomplish both. I think you can raise a hardworking kid, but then not make them have to just go fend for themselves with no head start at all.
It's really an interesting conversation. And I think, like, the societal benefits of having families being close are there as well. I think we start the pro-nepotism foundation, Dan.
Yeah,
I think we're going to work on this offline because I think this is a good idea. All right, let me get
it's like Nepo Baby, baby.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. I like it. All right, Dan Andrews, managing editor of CBN News. We went so long there, but I appreciate it. We got to come back and actually do this. I think this is a real thing here. CBN's Quick Start podcast is where he hosts. I don't know how much he talks about nepotism, but maybe he'll address that in coming weeks. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program.
See ya.
Well, Democrats who went through like a century of winning every single Supreme Court case, now that they've lost a couple, are really upset and think it's not legitimate. And there's been conversation about this particular story, which is Joe Morrell. He's a Democrat from New York. He's introducing an amendment to reverse the Supreme Court immunity ruling. And look, I mean, the immunity ruling's interesting. I mean, I've really been more focused on the political aspects of it so far, just to see what it was going to do with this Trump trial, because I've been talking about politics more lately. But you know, I don't know exactly if they got that right. Amy Coney Barrett had a concurring opinion that I thought was maybe better than the Roberts part of it. But the long story short here is that I don't know this guy. I don't know Morrell at all. I don't think I've ever even heard of him. But he's at least going about it the right way. If what you think is, if there's something wrong with the Constitution that you don't like, it's not just do it. It's not just, well, we'll just have the president do an executive order. It's not just, well, we'll go around it. We'll ignore it. No, amend the Constitution. If you're right, then amend the Constitution, and then you'll have this solved. It's the right way of doing it. It's the same thing with the Second Amendment. Don't pass laws that are unconstitutional. Don't lie. Don't have executive orders and panels and agencies that BS the Constitution. Try to repeal the Second Amendment. That's what you do. One more here. Novo Nordisk and Lilly must cut U.S. prices of weight loss drugs, says Joe Biden and also Bernie Sanders, which, of course, just you'd expect this from these economic geniuses. Here are multiple drugs that are perpetually in shortage. So obviously lowering the price of the drugs that no one can get because there's not enough of them is a really wise decision here. But I thought maybe they were going after, I mean, Biden says he wants drug prices lower for Eli Lilly. On the exact same day that Eli Lilly's new Alzheimer's drug was approved. Yes. I mean, could it be that he's just thinking, I'm going to have to buy that one and I want the price to be a little lower? I'm just throwing that out there as a theory. I don't necessarily have any evidence to support that, but it does seem all a little bit coincidental. Tomorrow is July 4th. You know, you got the picnics, you got the hot dogs, you got the apple pie, and you got baseball, right? America's pastime. It's an American of a weekend as you're possibly going to get. And I wanted to share a little baseball treat for you as we get close to the weekend. We're going to be away. This comes from a recent trip I had to Cooperstown, New York. We did the Baseball Hall of Fame with my son. It was an awesome weekend. He played a bunch of baseball at a baseball tournament. And he did very well and hit a home run, his first home run in a game It was freaking awesome. It's impossible to describe how much I wanted this to occur. And I will tell you, the video you're about to hear has me screaming like an absolute lunatic, basically because it's like a top five life moment for me. So I don't know if he's even going to remember it. I don't know. But I will tell you, I freaking loved it. So here it is, Zach's home run. Happy July 4th. Oh, oh, get out of here! Get out! Yes! Yes! Yes, yes, yes! 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 There you go, Zach!
Congratulations, Dad. Thank you.
There you go, Zach! My man! There we go, Zach! Finally. Ah!
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons. Oder, Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser Bestes.